Welcome to the Doula Tribe podcast. Today I have Natasha Bamblett. She's a proud First Nations woman living and learning on Narm country in Melbourne. She's also a mother raising her two warrior children and as the founder of Queen Acknowledgements and a business owner of over 10 years, she's passionate about making an impact through connection to self, culture and country. Her intention is to bring long-lasting positive change, identifying intergenerational trauma, and transforming it into intergenerational healing. She is passionate about women's voices and hopes to promote women to reclaim their power and own their story, having our voices counted and heard, empowering the ongoing healing journey for women. As her work continues to reach thousands of people across the world, her hope to raise awareness around harmful stereotypes, racism, family violence, and intergenerational trauma, to share her lived experience as a Black woman in this country. So welcome to the Doula Tribe podcast. Today we have a very special guest. I'm so excited to introduce you to Natasha Bamblett from Queen Acknowledgements. Oh my God, we have been around the world trying to get this podcast going, but here we are. And thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, this podcast feels special and really close to my heart. And I just love this space and this portal of women and birthing and babies and all that lives inside and outside of that.
Yes, amazing. I'm so excited. So I think you're going to do a little acknowledgement for me for this podcast. So I really appreciate that. So if you want to feel into that.
Perfect. It's beautiful that you are living and working and recording this on the country of where I come from. As I'm a proud Yorta Yorta Kurnai Wilfri Mawadjuri woman, I would like to acknowledge the lands of us connecting, of where I come from, the Bangarang country, acknowledging the ancestors that have lived and travelled through that place and along the Murray River, acknowledging the elders, the wisdom keepers, the knowledge holders, the song lines, the stories, the ceremonies, the languages and the kingship that has lived and lives on today, acknowledging anything through the cultural passages that have been lost throughout time, and acknowledging today's generation and our burais, our babies, who are the future. And I believe they are the connection of the full circle of life. So I want to acknowledge my people, my ancestors, my country, and also the country of where I am coming in from, where I live and grow and raise my beautiful burais on Narm and Wurundjeri, people of the Kulin Nations, and just acknowledging all the women and the journeys of where they are on today.
Wow, beautiful. Thank you. That was really special. Thank you so much for doing that. Amazing. So I'm very excited to ask you some questions, because originally I found you through one of your posts that you did about birth, and it was this beautiful picture of you with the Indigenous flag across your belly and this beautiful headpiece, and you were talking about birth.
Yeah.
And so that's how we connected. So I was really keen to get you on, and here you are. So I wanted to ask you, what do you think is probably the biggest catalyst moment in your life? What shifted and changed for you to do this type of work? Because I would say that you're doing a really amazing conscious, heart-led type business, entrepreneurial kind of business as well.
Yeah, I would like to say it's heart-centered, and what I do, I didn't choose. I believe it chose me, and choosing it in return has allowed the growth and the connections and the learning and success that I've experienced. And what has led me to this moment in life to shape my identity and who I am and how I show up in the world, it's been a continuous learning journey. There's been a few moments in time. The beauty in the pain, I would say, have been the things that have stood out and have stuck with me. Things like my first birth with my oldest boy, who just turned 9, and I was 19 at the time, and that was a full experience that even today I am still reflecting and learning from.
Yeah,
those parts of who I was and how I was and what power I had and didn't have. And in a beautiful, I'm mindful when I use this word of comparison, but it's just a beautiful contrast of who I was to who I am. And now 9 years on, I have another boy who I was really conscious about my decisions in the way I wanted to birth. And even though it didn't turn out the way I wanted, because I'd planned to have a home birth that was really decolonizing the way I'd had experienced my first birth.
Yeah.
And the systems and the restrictions. And it didn't work out the way I wanted to.
Yeah.
But it worked out perfectly as it needed to.
Yeah.
Need to heal from my first birthing experience with the system, with the support, with my own voice and power that I had grown over that time. And yeah, that's what's really catapulted me into the woman I am and how I get to show up in my work is with my boys and the future that I am creating and paving for them to grow as strong, resilient, connected, and thriving in both worlds that we live
in,
in our cultural ways and also the modern day society.
Yeah.
And I'll just get to share that with people.
How nice. That is really special. That kind of, I love the way you said that you want to raise the boys to be resilient. And yeah, I feel the exact same with my children. And yeah, I was the same with my home birth. I got the home birth, but that was the only time that I felt in control as well, compared to my first birth. So it's amazing how similar that is, because of, yeah, probably the level of control that we had around organizing our own birth instead of giving it to a care provider. And that's a really real thing for a lot of listeners, is that they don't know how to or where to start around organizing their own care providers and birth. So we'll talk a little bit more about that later in detail. But I'm interested about your work and how that looks every day to you. Can you just describe to me what you do, and for anyone who doesn't know who Queen Acknowledgements is?
Yeah, so Queen Acknowledgements is, I would say the core of it is an energy in the presence of connection to self, culture, country, and community. And what I do is create experiences for people at events with a guide and an invitation of how we can embrace and embody the country and the connection to it, bringing our awareness to it and gratitude, because acknowledging country isn't just the words that we speak, it's how we move, how we interact, how we perceive it and see it. So that's what the essence of Queen Acknowledgements is and how that was birthed. And I say things that maybe aren't said in rooms, and I always love to bring the high vibrational energy, positive hope, connectiveness, people coming together and allowing ourselves to heal in the space, letting go predominantly the feeling of shame and guilt that this nation feels with this history of First Nations people. And I'm aware that's a real thing that people hold and carry, and how it impacts their day-to-day interaction with people and country. And intergenerational trauma is a deep reflection of how this country has been cared for and is cared for, and just empowering people to be in a position of change and action through how we connect, and also getting to share that with all people from all ages and walks and cultures around this world, in education and in staff teams. And
yeah, that's so cool. You did mention earlier that you do like a spiritual healing session for someone later. Can you just describe to me what that looks like, so that we can really feel into what you do? And I'm just so interested in it. To me, you come across as you're a game changer. Like, you're just up there, like, boss woman, breastfeeding your baby on stage. I'm just like, yes, yes. You're just amazing. I get tingles in my body when I watch your videos. These kind of, you're just a woman that I aspire and love to be around, those conscious, high frequency women. Amazing. It's just amazing what you do.
Yeah, the healing spaces are just that. It's about being in space with people. And I just believe I've been given this gift and purpose that I'm really blessed that I've, at my age, been able to see some of the strengths I have and recognize them. And then I've just practiced and I've just applied myself to the things that I'm good at.
Yeah.
The things that people see in me, and I've explored that and become really curious about myself and on my own healing journey from childhood to breakups and heartache and feeling broken. Like, I've just healed myself. It's been almost 10 years on this journey of life, of discovering who I am, that because I've met myself in that way, I can be in space with others that are doing the same without judgment. And that's what healing is. It's painful and ugly and messy and scary and uncomfortable. And basically, I'm just holding people in the process of their healing, however that looks for them. And for each person, it's different. There's no comparison or judgment to trauma or healing that we experience. It is just what it is for each individual. And there's just space that I provide for them to feel, and I empower them to hold themselves in the space. And it looks like crying and laughing and sharing and listening and dancing and breathing and just becoming really conscious with our mind, body and spirit in the moment. And having this ancient wisdom that lives in my DNA, I just get activated sometimes. I get activated with messages and visions, and this thought comes into my head that's, don't know where it come from, but it's almost like the God's voice, creator's voice that just enters. And most times, all the time at the that I've experienced, it's been what somebody's experiencing or needing, or a place or an animal, or it's just a universal way, conscious way of living and being. And I just have this spiritual connection to the elements of what the earth holds, and I believe we all have that to some extent. And I'm just open to it. Like, I open my heart and my mind to it.
Beautiful. I love it. It reminds me of the work we do in the women's circles, that, you know, it's so sacred and special, and it's different every time. And yeah, I get you. That's super cool. That is super cool.
It is super cool. I even blow my mind sometimes.
You're just embodying the priestess archetype, is what I would say. That wise woman type of, yeah, some people just really have it and can guide people around that journey. So amazing. Yeah. So cool. I know that you've had two children. Do you want to touch on both births, or would you like to just talk about one? Because I'm open to either.
I think they both flow into each other. So,
okay.
We'll start with Jirali, who's my firstborn.
Beautiful name. Love that name.
It means to sing, to call, like a calling, to call.
Wow.
And I think the birthing of it actually started in the pregnancy. I was young, I was 19, and life had changed just instantly. And My body was doing things that my mind wasn't comprehending, and I wasn't consciously aware of, like, I couldn't make sense of things. Plus, the emotions were a lot. If you know. And the birthing plan was to have him in the hospital, and I ended up getting diagnosed with gestational, like, only 5 weeks before I'd had him, which was really weird. And I had been booked in, so I showed up on the day to go and start the process of bringing him on, and that didn't work so well. He was a bit stubborn, and I tried all of the things, medical interventions that I could. None of them worked. I think it was just time that needed to take its course. It wasn't until I'd had the balloon, which was a very uncomfortable, maybe it felt violating process. Like, I felt very vulnerable. It just didn't feel good. And then he'd become ready to come within the third day of being in the hospital.
Oh dear, that's a long time.
Yeah, plus food poisoning and
Oh.
process. So it's fun. And then I went through 22 hours of labor. And I
Even
got
after the induction.
I don't remember much because of the lack of sleep that I'd had. I just being in a lot of pain, and I'd lost control. Like, I remember that point where I'd lost control. And scary, because in any moment where you feel like you lose control, what it does to your nervous system and your mind, and you just have this almost out of body experience. And I'd had the epidural, which again took 3 goes to have. So I just had this really extensive experience of intervention. And then I'd push for 2 hours when they said he was ready. And he still didn't want to come. And he had to have forceps to be helped. But then
What do you think was like, if you were to look back in hindsight, like, why do you think he wasn't ready to come out?
because I wasn't in an empowered position as
So what I hear a lot is I didn't feel safe.
yeah, like, I didn't trust my body and I didn't trust my environment, and that's right, I didn't feel safe, and it was like everyone else knew better than me, and I didn't feel powerful that I had a voice or a say, and that's
Terrible.
scary. That's
Yeah,
scary.
it is. And did you have any support with you?
I had my mum who'd advocated, just being like, what's happening? Just checking, because they were just telling me what was happening, not asking me. So what is this and what's going on? And I was really glad that I'd had my mum in that time. And I think every woman should have, whether it's your partner or a parent or a friend or someone in the space that knows, or even that just gives you, like, checking in with you. Hang on, how do you feel? Okay with this? Because, yeah, a lot of that conversation wasn't taking place in my experience. And then there was complications afterwards, like, he'd had to stay in for a little bit and I had complications with my body. It was just because I had forced something that was not natural, and it just didn't feel natural at all. None of it. And it was really confusing because I was like, is this what birth is? Is this what every woman experiences? Is this how it feels? Because it wasn't good, and it scared me for a long time that I was afraid to get pregnant again.
Yeah, because it's 9, like 8 years between your children, isn't there?
Yeah, and
Yeah.
what had happened was afterwards of the baby and the checkups, I remember going back to the hospital, and the woman had just had in her mind of, let's give you the longest time of contraception. So they gave me the Mirena and said, so you don't have any more unwanted babies or pregnancies. And it just was like, at the time, my voice didn't say anything, but like my body had just felt it all. And it's not until later on in life that I was like, I just want to hug the Tash back then and being like, yeah, everything's going to be all right. Because it just felt really out of my control. And in that time, things have a funny way of showing itself in life. And I'd separated. So I went through a separation with my partner at the time, my son's father. And that was an interesting experience. That was lots of big energy shifting and moving, because it wasn't just the loss of a partner, it was a loss of my own self identity that I'd had wrapped up into that. And that was the most painful part. And the thought of, wow, I'm never going to have another kid. As time went on, I was like, is there more children for me? Is this going to happen? Because I need to have a partner. That was my thought. Like, I want a
Yeah.
partner to grow more children and a family and a life with. And mindful that that's not for everyone, but that's what I wanted for me. With Ledge, I'd conceived him at a really beautiful time. It was painful again, a painful experience that I'd had, and I'd felt very vulnerable and negatively. The event that took place in my life, I'd felt it was like an attack to my womb, like this negative energy had penetrated my womb. That was really, I closed off that part. I closed off the part of feeling intimacy and pleasure and even wanting to connect with my partner. Because when things happen to your children, you physically feel that happen to your body.
Yeah.
And he was lived in my womb. Like, I just felt this energy being struck into my womb. And it was a really closed off place for a long time until I went and did some healing on country and this beautiful clearing had taken place in my womb that the mother energy had supported me with. And I remember leaving that country and that place to come back home to this renewed, rebirth, reawakened energy. And I'd conceived him and everything changed.
That's so interesting, isn't it? The way that you had that healing and then you conceived him. That synchronicity, I think they call it. Yeah. Yeah, I absolutely resonate with that. That's, yeah.
Yeah, it was a very unique, powerful experience that I'd had in my life, and having him grow inside of me was really empowering. Because he just felt really strong. He felt intentional. He felt really clear and present, like that he there was ownership to him taking up the space,
taking there up
space in my body and my life. And I was so okay with everything that was happening. I was embracing it all, and that's where I wanted to have this birthing experience at home. And I'd had private care with my midwives, and my space, my physical environment, I'd had been preparing and clearing to have him in my home. And there was going to be elements of water and fire and my family. And this was what I'd prepared.
Yeah.
Within the pregnancy. And it was like I had done all the work leading up to having him. And he was 42 weeks almost. And I'd found out he was breech. And feet first. And I was like, oh, that's okay. So even in that moment, that was a little bit disheartening of, oh, it's not gonna.
Yeah.
But I was also okay with it because I'd entertained the thought of having a cesarean.
Okay.
It was interesting. Didn't know why. There was almost a what if.
Yeah.
See this happening. I was like, I'm okay with however it works out. The closer I got to the birthing time, I was like, I'm okay with however this turns out because I feel like I have done what I needed to do to prepare myself
and heal from your other breath.
And internally, I was really empowered, informed.
Yeah.
And I was making the decisions of
how
I wanted it to go. And by the time it got to that point of when the question was asked, what do you want to do? I just knew. I was like, this is okay. I'm okay for him. I'm going to have an elective cesarean. And I was ready. I was ready for him to come. The timing of him coming felt a bit odd.
Okay.
It was like it was offbeat.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Like
his date that he was born, it just didn't feel almost in a rhythm. It
felt very,
oh, you've been in this rhythm this whole time, and then something like just happened.
Yeah.
So it took a while for me to get back into my rhythm of my flow and my energy, my intuition again.
Mm.
And physically being cut open, you have a scarring of energy as well that you've got to weave back. You've got to weave back together, not just but like energetically and emotionally and spiritually. And I was mourning. I was mourning his birth a lot more than I did my first child, Jurali. But I also got to mourn him as well.
Mm.
To mourn the separation of him because I was meeting him through the pregnancy of Ledge. I was meeting my son for the first time.
Mm.
And the mother version that I've envisioned, and I was waiting for her to arrive, and she arrived, and I got to meet my son, which was really beautiful, and I got to become this new version of a mother that I was born in the same portal in time that Ledge was born. And it was really beautiful that I got to mourn both of my boys and the separation that had taken place within the birthing portals, which I really needed because I didn't have that. And even though he was cut open, so I was cut open and he was taken out, he bypassed the birthing channel, like he'd come through a different route, but I'd still felt the energetic and emotional clearing of him. It just took a bit longer than
if I
was to go through that natural laboring, which for me, I understand why it's so important.
Yeah.
And why that is so special and sacred and holy. And I believe the next time, I think I'll get just that, because I've cleared and allowed space for that to take place.
Well, yes, I absolutely agree you will, because you have totally done all of that beautiful work, and you're inspirational, and I think a lot of listeners would resonate with what you were saying about the cesarean and how the, and you're just so in touch with your body, and like that kind of emotional intelligence that you have is just beautiful. And yes, so cool to see. It's not a lot of people speak the way you speak around birth, and I think a lot of listeners would really learn a lot from that, so thank you.
My pleasure. And I think
very special.
I think it's something that women don't often talk about.
No.
We just, it's something we do. It's not something that is openly invited to be shared.
Yes. You're right.
Not enough space is held and given to women, because every birth, no matter how quick or long or whatever way it takes place, it is traumatic. That is a trauma event that is taking place.
My other child. Hey, where's daddy? Hold on, I'll just pause. I was wondering how your postpartum was compared to your first birth with Sledge. Like, how did that look? What was the community around you? Did it feel different and things like that?
It did. One, because I'd had built or grown a community just through life. And at that time, I was really supported and connected with people with rich connection and conversation, and people had known me like deep. I was having deep conversations with people. They weren't surface conversations where I probably was at 19 with people. I'd had friends that were probably younger than me. Some weren't even 18. Lots of them were in the party scene. So I didn't have friends in a community that were supporting me with my first child. And I was just a child trying to navigate life and a relationship and being a mum and this new baby that I had no idea what was right or wrong. And I was living under my parents' roof, so I was still a child.
Mm.
Child raising a child. So that was my community support, which I needed at that time. That's what I needed. And second time round, I had a really powerful relationship with my partner, and he was solid. Like, he was so nurturing and nourishing and available and present and whatever it took. Like, there was no questions. Like, he just did whatever he needed to do to support me and our boys, which was great. Like, I didn't have to do much. And I had been leaning into boundaries. So then people had an expectation of like how to support me. Like, that it was easy for them. They're like, cool, you need food, you want food, I'll bring food. Just I'll sit and talk and check in with you and not have to be there to, you know,
you didn't have to host people. They were I know what you mean.
Or they weren't there for for the baby without being there for me. They were there like, how can I make your life in this moment easy for you? And I had, you know, sisters coming and bringing food and like dropping in, like, you okay? Like, you feeling well? I had a woman coming to give me a massage in my home. Like, I was so aware of, like, what are the things that support me?
Mm.
And I was doing that. Like, I was connecting with another sister who had a baby at the same time from the other side of the world. Like, we were jumping on Zooms and, hey, what's going on for you? Like, how's the sleeping? How's your relationship? Like, it was just, I was in such a deep care of community. And that was beautiful. So the journeys were different, but what they needed to be at those times, like, that's just where I was.
Yeah, that's really nice. And do you, I wonder, like, the question popped into my mind, it's, why do you think other women can't ask for what they need in their postpartum? Or what has led us, or some women, to the point where they just are doing it all and pretending they're fine? And what are you seeing in your culture or your community around that?
One being, we don't know what we want. So women just not knowing how to care for themselves.
Mm.
What does care look and feel like?
Yeah.
And not knowing what we want or need. And then also the ability to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
And ask and accept help. And I've learned that along the way, that it's not serving me if I am not allowing someone to help. Like, it's actually robbing them from the opportunity.
Mm.
When they offer help, let them.
Yeah.
Like, that is not being selfish, or like, you're allowing somebody to do what their nature is asking for them to do.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, if somebody's going to offer me help, let them.
Yeah. And absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think there's women in particular, it's in our nature to give. We're the supporters, we're the nurturers, we're the caregivers. And then when we're in a position of, I can't do that or be that for everyone around me, I'm the one who needs help, it's really hard for us to let go of that, like, the pride or ego a little bit, and be like, hey, we're allowed to be cared for. We're allowed to have someone else do the work.
Yeah. And someone described it to me as masculine and feminine energy. The masculine energy does do, and often women are in that because of the careers we pick or the type of lifestyle we live. And then when we're in femininity, which is receive, we struggle. Mm-hmm. I've experienced that myself. Depending on where you've come from or how you have been in your career, often it can be a really massive shift or transition phase into motherhood, can't it?
Yeah, society's expectations, what we expect of ourselves and other women. It's a lot.
Yeah.
Sudden life changes, and
we
have to care for this little human. But to do that, we must care for ourselves and have others to provide that care and support for us.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And in your culture as First Nations, do you feel like that ripple effect of that community care and support a little, like, how does it look? And what traditions or little things that you do in your culture that are different to our culture? Can you describe that?
Yeah, so one of them being, when I birthed Ledge, I had a kulaman, and possum skin. So Kulaman is like a big wooden bowl babies have been carried in since the beginning, and Ledge was put into his Kulaman and possum skin as soon as he was birthed and taken back to the room. That's what he was in and what he'd slept in for the first 2 to 3 weeks of his life. And I really wanted him to connect to him as his own body and spirit, knowing that country was there with him as well. I didn't get that chance with Jirali. A smoking ceremony. So as you've heard, smoking ceremonies are connected to welcomes, or when you go onto country or when you leave country. But spending some time up in Arnhem Land, where culture is quite rich in the ceremony and kingship practices, especially with babies. So when babies are born, they will go through a ceremony where they're smoked. So they're smoked from the energy, and it's almost like the clearing of that portal and allowing them to be themselves, and a bit of that clearing from mum as well. So the mothers are smoked, so when they first have baby, we bleed for a while. So they have these leaves, particular leaves, medicine leaves, where they'll soak in water, and the steam from it women will sit over.
Wow.
Have this cleansing and clearing of the womb space, and women will just like rest.
Yeah.
It's like resting on country and with country, and that's where kingship of grandmothers and sisters and aunties will all play a role in caring and nurturing this child while mum's rest, and then bringing the baby to mum, and when mum needs to feed, and feeding mum and cooking and having all that food of nourishment from the land. And it's just being in deep rest and going at the pace of the country, because I think we want to make life busy again, or go back to, we want to bounce back and go back to
normal. Yeah, I hate that word.
And I'm like, what is actually just moving forward look like? And it's just going with the flow, and our body is a beautiful indication of that. And you know, we use the country as our guide, as our mother, as our main carer and nurturer and provider. So traditions like that still exist, are still really strong within the birthing space of our women. And I, with Ledge, had tried to decolonize the way I'd experienced it, and for him to have that sense of connection. And when I'd shared that I'd done that with women up in Arnhem Land, Yolngu people, they said to me, I am making the bloodlines strong again.
Yeah.
Spirits and the ancestors connection, the old people into the new ways of doing that with Ledge. And I want to encourage First Nations women today that we have the opportunity to continue to embrace and embed these into our birthing portals and practices, and the care for all women, that the nature and the country is here and has been here, and for us to use that as a beautiful guide to support ourselves. So yeah, there's some of the ways.
That's very, I have tingles. I'm like, wow, I would have loved to have even just some of those traditions myself. I'm like, oh my God. Well, I just hope that some women listening, or if they could tell their friends or just First Nations people that they know to do that, because what a special way to change generations and break that cycle that some people are in, and really shift this stuff that's really, and I feel it anyway. I think we're all moving into a different level of consciousness with our children. Like, you can see it in our children, they're just different. Yeah, that's one of the ways, though, that's going to shift some things in Australia.
The era and time is changing, and so are the people, ways.
Yeah.
From intergenerational trauma over time, too, we can dish.
Deconstruct.
It's like deconstruct and decompose how that's been
Yeah.
and integrate the ancient wisdom and ways to lead us to intergenerational healing.
Yeah.
And that's really powerful because we all get to be a part of the core source of healing. Because when we do it for ourselves, then our children, it will be filtered through our children and the country and everyone else in our communities and who are in our lives that we get to touch and impact.
Yes. Well, I have no words. So thank you so much for your beautiful words and your wisdom. And I am just so grateful that I got to experience this conversation with you. So thank you.
My pleasure.
How can people connect with you? What's the best way?
Yeah, people can find me on Instagram at Queen Acknowledgements and Facebook, LinkedIn, website Queen Acknowledgements. And I'd love to connect to people, whether it be on country or in your own spaces. Let's continue
Beautiful.
to walk together.
Thank you. I really appreciate this call, and I'm sure this is not the first time we will meet and speak together. Yeah, thank you again.
Thanks.